Warning. The following broadcast you're about to listen to is filled to the brim with explicit adult language and content. Don't like it? Don't listen to it. Don't complain about it. Just ignore it. If you like it or don't mind it, then listen up and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Tuesday, June 15th, 2021. This is episode 92. For the very observant, there was no episode last week. Admittedly, I don't remember off the top of my head. I remember I mentioned something about there being a possible delay. And I think I may have mentioned that it might just go until the following week, which is the case here, is it did go into this week. It's just too difficult with getting back from the family vacation and stuff to fit in the time right after getting it all done and stuff. It was a long-ass trip. But we'll get into that here in a moment. Why not yesterday, why today? I'll admit, I've actually been feeling a little bit under the weather. I honestly think I've just developed some hellish level allergies by the sounds of it from talking to my doctor and shit. So yeah, it's been fun. If I sound a little stuffy or, you know, like congested or something, that would be why. I've taken a shit ton of shit this morning though, so we should be fine, but let's go ahead and move on, shall we? What's going on in my neck of the woods? Well, as I mentioned, the past week or two have been very, very busy. We took a trip down to Indiana, not this past weekend, but the weekend before that. It was fun, but at the same time, it was a lot of work. There's a lot of lack of sleep. The biggest thing was, like, on the way back, what should have been a 4-hour trip took over 8 hours before we were finally at home and sitting. So, yeah, and that was last week Monday, hence why there was no episode last week Monday. And then trying to fit it in throughout the week just wasn't going to happen. So, beyond that, as far as the hobbying specific stuff goes, well, once again, I emphasize, been very, very, very busy lately. So it just hasn't been happening much. We did finally play Cursed City for the first time in a couple weeks, last night, oddly enough, and, we had a lot of fun. It was actually a very successful, journey. We were working on a decapitation, to take out, Watch Captain Halgrim. We got through the deliverance portion, and yeah, if you pause your game after the deliverance portion of a decapitation mission, then you automatically start in Nightfall on the next phase when you're actually in the enemy's lair. We managed to finish the deliverance with one turn to Nightfall, so therefore, once the next game begins, it was going to be Nightfall anyways, so we didn't fucking worry about it. But yeah, it was nice to actually play Cursed City and not get our asses handed to us. There was a few times things seemed a little tight. In fact, the way the game started right off the bat, having two Vircos, like, just two spaces away from us because of how small the first room was, followed up by a Vark's gear in the next room, and it was just like, oh shit, and a shit ton of corpse rats too. We ended up smoking everything and blasting our way through the whole damn the deliverance. Looking forward to finishing it. I'm not certain. Might finish it tonight, even, that decapitation. I'm trying to think. Got children, wife's on call. Yeah, it's entirely possible. So, if so, you'll hear about it next week. But if not, then you won't hear about it next week unless I do it a different day. Anywho, let's go ahead and move on from talk about Cursed City. Beyond that, hobbying-wise, I've not built a damn thing that I can think of in several weeks. Just once again on account of being super busy. So But I have many hobby projects in front of me, many more to come, and I'm going to kind of start working on shit. But let's go ahead and get into the newsy bits. Now, there's been a fuck ton of news since we last spoke. I'm not going to go through everything. In the past, I've skipped out on some of the stuff anyways to begin with. In this case, while there are a fuck ton of new articles and all sorts of other shit to go over, most of it is talking about previews for the new Age of Sigmar, as well as how current factions will work in Age of Sigmar 3.0. I'm not going to go through all of that shit. That just seems a little much. We would have a whole episode dedicated just to previews. And quite frankly, I'm going to finish that Drukhari Codex review today is my plan. I will not be going line by line through all the units or anything. We're going to go over the rest of the stuff that affects the army as a whole, talk a little bit about the FAQ and how that affects the gameplay, and then maybe discuss a few highlighted units specifically. But overall, the goal is not to read line by line on how the stats and points and everything for every single fucking thing count for something. We'll get into that in a bit. Let's see here. What do we want to talk about news-wise? Well, the big news, once again, obviously AOS 3.0 will be coming out in the near future. They did reveal the release date and everything. Dominion will be starting pre-orders this weekend, the 19th, and it will be being released on the 3rd of July. So, fingers crossed, here's to hoping that I can get my hands on one. I know there are several different places already talking about, having the box sets available. It's for pre-order, like, already, basically. Kind of like a pre-order sort of dealio. So check with your local game store, see what they're planning to do with it and everything, and just kind of plan accordingly. Pre-orders this Saturday starting. It does sound like they're making a shit ton of copies. I am hoping, too, they're going to do like they did with Indomitus, where they will be having made-to-order copies as well. Fuck scalpers and fuck all that bullshit. It's just no fun when you can't get the goddamn game in the first goddamn place. They will also be doing, there's a lot of stuff just like when 40K 9th launched. There's some terrain, objective sets. There's a Path to Glory diary, which the new Path to Glory does sound pretty fucking cool, admittedly. I'm really looking forward to that. I think my wife is too, it's probably one of the coolest features they have going on with the 3.0 launch. You can, however, as a note, download the core rules for free right now. I have not gotten a chance to really dig into them much. I've poked over them a little bit. There's some cool shit in there. Namely, the amount of command abilities that are going to be reactive abilities and stuff certainly seems pretty cool. If you're interested, pay attention to your stores, pay attention to your online orders, etc. June 19th. This past weekend, they did start doing pre-orders for the Gaunt's Ghost stuff, releasing the new Adeptus Sororitas items. So you can get the Codex, the War Suits, Morvan Vall, the Dogmata, Celestian Sacrosants. Sea Crescents. Okay, enough trying to figure out how to pronounce this thing and then making fun of pronunciations. The Castigator is the only thing off the top of my... Oh, no, not the only thing. The Castigator's not going to be available right now. And then, I can't think of the name of the character, but the one banner-bearing person who's all like, look at my banner and how I'm bearing it, that one is not available yet either. So most of the new Sororitas launch will be available to purchase right now. Once again, check your local stores and such too, see if you can get one. Support local when you can. Moving on though, here, they did yesterday I believe it was. Yes, June 14th, they put out an article, A New Here We Go for the Orcs. There's some cool little bits about a giant Squigasaurus, the Great White Squig, and a dude man riding it, and all this other stuff, blah, blah, blah. But none of that's the cool information compared to the fact that we have confirmation of a new Orc Boys kit. That's right, the Orc Boys models are getting updated. So that's great news. I feel bad. My wife has like 5 or 6 boxes of boys unbuilt. And obviously they'll still be fully compatible. I mean, it's not like they suddenly stop working. That's not how models work. So, but still, it's just kind of like, oh, there's going to be new cool stuff. And I got the old stuff, but the old stuff's fine. I mean, those old orc kits still look pretty badass. So, you know, she's just going to have more orcs. There's still no word on when we're going to see the new orc codex. When we're going to see the new orc codex, that's the word I'm looking for, or the Beast Snaga's army box, or any of these other new kits and shit. So, you know, stay tuned for information on that shit. If I had to take a guess, probably in July, I would think, considering they're doing this whole Dominion launch, although with it launching on the 3rd, yeah, there's quite a few weekends actually in July. So apparently July is a 5-weekend, a yawn. How the fuck did that happen? Probably because of all the damn drugs I'm on right now. Yeah, it's a pretty lengthy month, so it's as far as the number of Saturdays go, so it's possible July, depending on what their release schedule's like post-Dominion launch with AOS, so we will have to see. So, but yeah, beyond that, one other thing before I wrap this up here, and we'll take a break and then get into the good stuff there, the meat and potatoes. Yeah, they do have FAQs out available. Like I said, we're going to talk a little bit about the Drukhari one as how it relates to the Codex review. But there are updates, it looks like, for pretty much everything for the most part. Oh, no, there's a few older ones. Yeah, there's a lot of newer ones, but there's a handful of older ones that did not get updated. So, man, I take it back. I'm actually scrolling through this going, damn, there's actually a lot of things that did. What? Why is that? Oh, okay. So sorry, I'm sitting here trying to figure out what the fuck. They updated a lot of, like, Psychic Awakening chapter approved, some certain specific box set thing. Like, why is Piety and Pain need an update? Apparently Retributor updated. Oh, probably to bring them in line with the new thing. Bring them in line with the Adeptus Sororitas book that came out. So but you can go ahead, grab your FAQs, and go to town with that right now. Head on over to the Warhammer community site to download it. So, but let's go ahead and take a break. When I come back, we're going to go ahead and get into that Drukhari review and talk about near future plans with the podcast. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break, for the meat and potatoes today, we are going to finish up this Drukhari Codex review. Many episodes in the making. We're gonna be done with it though. So let's see here. Last time I believe left off talking about the individual sub faction choices. There's my brain going. Talking about, you know, the witches, the witch cults, the cabals, and the homunculus covens. But wanted to, you know, once again take it a step further, go through the, we'll probably go through the stratagems, as well as the specific warlord traits, relics, all that jazz. We're not going to go into the crusade shit and whatnot, just because that's a very niche thing, and does play very differently. We'll talk about the abilities, you know, covering some of the ones from previous as well as some specific highlight units and the FAQ. So quite a bit to go through, but at the same time, when I mentioned the units thing, we are not going to be going line by line once again. I'm not going to go through each individual fucking unit, because that seems silly. Even then, I might not even really go through most of the units at all. So, you know, just highlighting those specifics. So, namely things that are related to the FAQ. But let's go ahead and get into this shindig. Right off the bat, I do want to mention FAQ-wise, they did make a major change to the raiding forces thing. So if every detachment in your army is a Drukhari patrol detachment, change the command cost of those detachments to 0 CP. They also added change the command benefits of those detachments to none. The basic gist there being that you're not going to get, I think it's plus 2 off the top of my head. You're not going to get the bonus CP for having the Warlord in a specific detachment. With regular detachments, it costs you X amount of CP. I don't remember what off the top of my head for all of them, but let's just say it costs you 3 CP to have the detachment, but if your Warlord's in the detachment, you get plus 3 CP as a command benefit. You're not going to get that here. So the patrol detachments are free, so you don't have to spend any points on them, but you're not going to get extra points on top of that. So keep that in mind. When you are building your force, you will not have as much CP available as you probably did prior to the FAQ. That being said, you know, getting free CP on top of being able to have detachments cost no CP, it certainly affects things. So, quite greatly. So, but let's go ahead and get moving on here. We already went over the real space raid. Let's go ahead and talk stratagems. So, the stratagems here in the Drukhari Codex are broken down into the same, you know, types of stratagems, just like the other books. Battle tactics, requisition, strategic ploys, and war gear stratagems. So, we'll start at the top, work our way through, and just kind of rate the value of each one. So let's go ahead and start with Cruel Deception, which is 1 CP or 2 CP cost. Use this stratagem in your movement phase. When a Drukhari unit from your army falls back, you can select for this unit to be eligible to shoot this turn or eligible to declare a charge this turn or both. If you select both, it costs 2 CP, otherwise it costs 1 CP. The ability to fall back and then follow it up with shooting or charging, phenomenal ability as far as I'm concerned, especially at this cost. The one of the major weaknesses to falling back is you're left kind of out in the breeze. In the last edition, while I was playing League games, my very first League game, my Doomcrawler got tar pitted down by a fucking Tau drone that kept getting into combat with it, and then I would fall back to get away from it, but I couldn't fall back fast enough to get out of its ability to just run up and put me back into combat. Eventually, I gave up and just tried punching the thing to death, but that didn't work either. So, being able to fall back, and then if I could have shot at the stupid thing after falling back, that would have helped immensely, but I couldn't, so... The Great Enemy was 1 CP. It's in the fight phase. When a Drukhari unit from your army is selected to fight, until the end of the phase, each time a model in that unit makes a melee attack against a Slaanesh unit, you could reroll the hit roll and reroll wound roll. That's quite good. It's extremely specific, though. I don't know how frequently you're going to be playing against Slaanesh armies, so, or people who have Slaanesh keywords in some of their army. So, you know, useful if you happen to be playing against Slaanesh, but otherwise it's complete garbage. And even then, against Slaanesh, it is quite powerful. But you have to be in melee and, Yeah, it does let you reroll all of your hit rolls and all of your wound rolls. So, yeah, that is very powerful. But once again, it is just so specific that you're probably not going to use it often. So it's not that it's bad in and of itself. It's just not super universal. In fact, it's not universal at all. Moving on. The Torturer's Craft. 1 CP or 2 CP again. In the fight phase, when Urien, Rakarth, or a Homunculus Coven unit from your army is selected to fight, till the end of the phase, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, you could reroll the wound roll. If this stratagem is used when a character or Rax unit that contains 10 or less models is selected to fight, it costs 1. Otherwise, it costs 2. This would be a little bit more useful than the Great Enemy, as far as being able to reroll wounds. You're going to be able to do this more frequently. But it, once again, only affects Rakarth or Homunculus Coven units. So if you haven't built your army with that character or the Covens in mind, once again, does you no good. Lightning Fast Reactions for 1 CP. In your opponent's shooting phase or the fight phase, when a Drukhari infantry vehicle or biker unit from your army, excluding Rakarth or a Homunculus Coven unit, is selected as the target of an attack. Until the end of the phase, each time an attack is made against that unit, subtract 1 from that attack's hit roll. Yeah, becoming harder to hit is always good. At the same time, I believe that with the changes in 9th edition, you are not going to be able to really stack that too terribly much, so something to keep in mind. But for 1 CP, it's not a bad choice. Hunt from the Shadows, 1 CP. Use it in your opponent's shooting phase when a Drakari unit from your army that has the benefits of light cover is selected. Until the end of that phase, add an additional 1 to that unit's saving throws, excluding invulnerable saving throws. So, that would be, you know, far more powerful. If the enemy's able to cut through light cover, you're still going to get light cover, or at least improved versus versus just being out in the open and stuff there. So definitely, you know, not a bad choice. Definitely something I could see some good use out of, particularly since Drukhari are generally so glass cannon and easy to kill. Being able to defend yourself better is a good choice. Alliance of Agony. It's 1 CP. Use it before the battle when you are mustering your army if your warlord is a real space raider archon. Select 1 succubus from your army and 1 homunculus from your army, excluding named characters, and determine 1 warlord trait for each of these models. They are only regarded as your warlord for the purposes of the trait. Each trait in your army must be unique, and you cannot use a stratagem to give a model 2 warlord traits. You can only use a stratagem once. So basically, you get to stack warlord traits, which we will once again go over the generic choices here in a little bit. Once again, 1 CP, not bad. Tolerated Ambition, use it before the battle. If the warlord has the Drukhari keyword, select 1 Drukhari character model from your army and determine 1 warlord trait for it. Also, it excludes named characters. That model is only regarded as your warlord for the purposes of that warlord trait. Each trait in your army must be unique. You cannot use it to give 2. You can only use a stratagem once, unless you're playing a strike force battle in which you can use it twice, or an onslaught in which you can use it 3 times. So, Tolerated Ambition is a little bit, it's basically the same as Alliance of Agony as to how it works. But it's a little less specific. Whereas Alliance of Agony requires you to have a Warlord Real Space Raider Archon and have a Succubus and have an Homunculus to give everybody traits to, this one lets you just pick a second character of any type as long as your Warlord has the Drukhari keyword. So, similar idea, but a lot more open use. So, prizes from the Dark City. Use a strategy before battle. If the warlord has the Drukhari keyword, select 1 Drukhari character and give them 1 artifact of cruelty. This must be a relic they can have. Each relic in your army must be unique, and you cannot use this strategy when you give a model 2 relics. You can only use it once, unless it's in a strike force, then twice, onslaught 3 times. You can pass out some free relics. This book does not have a ton of relics to choose from. Nor does it have a ton of warlord traits even too, unless, you know, as far as the universally useful ones go. So, Webway Portal, use a strategy before the battle when declaring reserves of transports. If you spend one CP, you can set up one Drukhari infantry, biker, or beast unit in the Webway instead of placing on the battlefield. If you spend three CPs, you can place two infantry, biker, or beast units in the Webway instead. In the reinforcement step of one of your movement phases, you can set up any units in the Webway anywhere on the battlefield that's more than 9 inches away from any enemy models. You can only use this stratagem once. So, yeah, if you want to be able to, you know, put people into reserve and just pop up wherever and kick their asses and shit, you know, it's a good choice. Pain Siphon, 1 CP. Use it when a Drukhari unit from your army that's within 6 inches of a friendly Kronos unit destroys an enemy unit with a melee or ranged attack. Till the end of the battle, that unit is always treats each battle round as if it is battle round 5 for the purposes of the Power from Pain ability. So the Power from Pain, we will go back over the specifics on how Power from Pain works. It's cumulative. I know we've gone over this before, but we're going to go over it again right here. It's a cumulative effect. In this case, you would have all 5 effects, which makes it so that you have a 5+ invuln eventually. You may charge in a turn in which you advanced. You can automatically pass morale tests. Make a melee attack. You add 1 to the hit roll if it has a vehicle or monster keyword. Does not suffer the penalty incurred to its hit rolls for firing heavy weapons at enemy units that are within engagement range of it. So you get to have all of that stacked together with this Pain Siphon ability. So, Eviscerating Flyby. Using your movement phase, when you select a Witch Cult unit that can fly to make a normal move or advance. After this unit has moved, select 1 enemy unit. This unit moved across and roll 1d6 for each model of this unit. Adding 1 to the result if the enemy unit is an infantry unit. For each result of 5+, they suffer 1 mortal wound. If selected, Witch Cult units contains 5 or fewer models. This strategy costs 1 CP. Otherwise, it costs 2 CP. Overall, being able to dish out free mortal wounds is good. We'll have to see, you know, how that actually pans out. On a 5+, you should be dishing out a decent amount of mortal wounds, admittedly. So, yeah, I would say that this is a decent selection here. Never Stationary. The 2 CP, use it your shooting phase after making attacks with a Drukhari unit, excluding aircraft from your army. They can immediately make a normal move of up to 7 inches. Till the end of the turn, that unit is not eligible to declare a charge. 2 CP is not cheap. Free movement can be a godsend if used properly. So it depends on your situation, but seems pretty useful to me. Next, Prey on the Weak. For 1 CP, use a stratagem in the shooting phase or fight phase. When a Drukhari core unit from your army is selected to shoot or fight, until the end of the phase, each time a model of this unit makes an attack, if that attack targets a unit that was below its starting strength of when... starting strength when this unit was selected to shoot or fight, reroll a hit roll of 1. If that attack targets a unit that was below half strength when this unit was selected to shoot or fight, you can reroll the hit roll. So, you basically go up against dudes that have been damaged. You get bonuses. If they're really super damaged, you get a lot of bonuses. Once again, rerolls on hits are good choices. So, Screaming Jets for 1 CP. Use a strategy before the battle when the reserves and transports, blah, blah, blah. You can set up 1 Drukhari vehicle unit from your army in the skies instead of playing it on the battlefield. Reinforcements and such. So, useful if you got a transport that's got a handful of dudes, you know, packed away in it. Or if you just want to drop a vehicle into a really, really bad spot for your opponent, that's not a bad choice. So, Deadly Rivals, 2 CP, use it in the command phase. Select 1 Reaver's army, a unit from your army, and 1 Hellion's unit from your army that are within 12 inches invisible to each other until the end of the turn. Add 1 inch of the movement characteristics to the movement characteristics of models in these units. Each time a model in these units makes an attack with a melee weapon, you can reroll the hit roll. Once again, rerolls They're moving slightly faster. Good stuff. So, next, Swift Outflanking. One CP. Use this stratagem at the end of your movement phase. Select one Drukhari transport unit from your army that is wholly within 9 inches of the battlefield. Remove that unit from the battlefield. It's placed into strategic reserves. So basically, if you want to pull somebody out after they've done some good, either they ran up, did some damage and stuff, or if your enemy is not expecting that, you're going to be looking at some free movement where they are going to have to prepare for the possibility of this transport just dropping in their lines, or not directly in it, obviously, because you have to still be 9 inches away, but a lot closer and from a different quarter, etc. Good choice. Murderous Descent for 1 CP. Use it in the reinforcement step after a transport is set up on the battlefield. Any units embarked on that transport can disembark it after it is set up, but when they do so, they must be more than 9 inches away from any enemy units. So, you can basically have a transport in strategic reserves. When you call it in as reinforcements, they can, disembark right immediately after they set up the transport. Any dudes in there can get out. So once again, movement wins game. So pray they don't take you alive. Epic deed stratagem. Use a stratagem in the fight phase when an enemy warlord unit is destroyed by a melee attack made by a Drukhari unit from your army. Till the end of the battle, each time a combat attrition test is taken for an enemy unit, subtract one from that combat attrition test. I was just rereading it because I was like, wording wise. You're gonna result in your enemy losing more dudes to attrition, to morale. Once again, leadership normally isn't that big of a deal, so it's okay. Enhanced ether sails for 1 CP. Using your movement when a raider or a ravager is selected to advance, do not make an advance. Instead, until the end of the phase, just add 80 inches to the move characteristic. So you can move a hell of a lot faster, which is good. They don't necessarily need to go faster, but if you find yourself in a situation where that is useful, go for it. Crucible of Malediction. Use a stratagem in your psychic phase. Select one homunculus from your army and roll 1d6 for each enemy psyker within 12 inches of it. For each roll of 4+, that psyker unit suffers d3 mortal wounds. You can only use this stratagem once. So, for 2 CP, dishing out some free mortal wounds on a bunch of psykers, that could be useful on the assumption that your enemy has a bunch of psykers. Otherwise, it's, once again, kind of useless garbage. So, Haywire Grenade for 1 CP, use it in your shooting phase when a Drukhari Haywire Grenade unit from your army is selected to shoot. Select one model in that unit. That model can only make one attack this phase and must target an enemy vehicle unit within six inches of it. But if a hit is scored, the vehicle suffers D3 mortal wounds and the attack sequence ends. Being able to dish out mortal wounds, especially against vehicles that can be tougher from time to time, not a bad choice. So, Hyperstim Backlash for 2 CP. Use a stratagem in your command phase. Select one Witch Cult unit with the Combat Drugs ability from your army. Until your next combat phase, each effect of the Combat Drugs ability on that unit is doubled. For example, if the unit's affected by Painbringer, add 2 to the toughness characteristic instead of 1. A model with the File Bouquet Relic cannot be selected for this stratagem. So it's specific, but being able to double the bonuses you're already getting is not bad. Shock Prowl for 1 CP, use it when in the charge phase, when a Drukhari Shock Prowl unit finishes a charge move, select one enemy unit within engagement range, and then do the following. If the selected enemy unit is a vehicle unit, roll 1d6 on a 2+, they suffer d3 mortal wounds. If they're not a vehicle, roll 1d6 for each model on the enemy unit that's within engagement range of the Shock Prowl. For each dice result that equals or exceeds the enemy's unit's toughness characteristic, it suffers 1 mortal wound. So, for each model. So, you would need to basically roll off and see if you can just ditch out a bunch of random damage. This is nice. Bonus damage, 1 CP. You have to have a vehicle with a shock prow to make it worthwhile. All right. And then lastly, as far as stratagem specifically goes, we have the potent metallotoxins. For 2 CP, use it in the shooting or fight phase when you select your car unit from your army to shoot or fight. Oddly enough. Until the end of the phase, each time an attack is made with a poison weapon, excluding relics by that unit, that ability does not exclude vehicle units, though it does still exclude Titanic units. So basically, if you find yourself in a pinch where you don't have a good AT weapon to choose from, but you need to do some vehicular damage, this would be a good choice. It's only good for one unit, so you want to make sure it's something that can still make it count. I personally would want to put it on something that dumps out a bunch of shots, as opposed to higher quality but lower quantity shots. You want to take advantage of the fact that poison will affect the vehicle. So if you've got a shit ton of like Kabbalite warriors that all have poisoned weapons and shit, now you can actually do some pretty hefty damage pretty quickly to a vehicle with inferior weapons. So definitely fucks with your opponent's head and plan for sure. But yeah, overall, a lot of the stratagems are kind of similar to ones you see in other books. There's a whole lot of rerolls, which I find a rather useful feature to have overall. So a lot of these stratagems are pretty decent. So there's nothing really total trash. Just more stuff that's very specific. So, all right, let's go ahead and move on next to the generic warlord traits. I cannot speak today. Once again, it's probably all these fucking drugs. So you've got Cabal warlord traits, Witch Cult warlord traits, and Homunculus Coven warlord traits. Rather than having full tables for each, they've each just got three to choose from. For the Cabal, we have Hatred Eternal. Each time the Warlord makes an attack, you can reroll the hit roll and the wound roll. If you've got a blender of an Archon, that would probably not be a bad choice if that was your whole goal with him. Soul Thirst. Add one to the attack's characteristic of the Warlord. Once per turn, when an enemy model that is within 6 inches of this Warlord is destroyed, the model regains one lost wound. So, if we're talking about an Archon specifically, since once again, you're talking Cabal warlord traits. He's already got 5 attacks. Hits on 2s and, his weapons, depending on which weapon you are using. Is that only against melee? No. Depending on which weapons you are specifically using will obviously change the mileage on this. But overall, if they are meant to be blending through shit, there's some good choices there. and then Ancient Evil, at the start of the fight phase, you can select one enemy unit within engagement range of the Warlord. That unit is not eligible to fight this phase until all eligible units from your army have done so. So yeah, you can keep your opponent from hitting you in any capacity until you are good and ready for them to hit you. Out of the three, I would say that's probably the better choice. Once again, I'm a big fan of things that affect more of the army than just the Warlord. So, next up, we have the Witch Cult Warlord traits. And I think I just bashed my headphones against the microphone and I don't care. let's move on then. Quicksilver Fighter. Add 2 to the attacks characteristics of this Warlord. Now, Witch Cults already, the Succubus already is a pretty powerful melee character. She already has 6 attacks, so now you'd be looking at 8 attacks in total. That's not including any other bonuses she gets from any sort of special rolls or anything of that nature. So you are looking at really turning this bitch into a badass blender. So then we got Stim Addict. When determining the effects of the combat drugs ability for this warlord before the battle, roll 2 additional dice. Rerolling results of 6 or results that are already in effect. This warlord's combat drugs ability has these benefits in addition to any others. So you are looking at having 3 In total, if I'm reading that correctly. Now it doesn't say, it says it doesn't let you have number six. Roll two, rerolling. So I'm assuming that that means all three dice probably do not get to have Splinter Mind. Improve the ballistic skill and leadership characteristics of models in this unit by one. Which, admittedly, let's see, her ballistic skill, she's already got 2+. Leadership, she's already at 8. Wouldn't even be really all that fucking useful anyway. So, yeah, whatever. Admittedly, looking at the combat drugs as well, Serpentine is pretty useless to a succubus. Everything else, though, including Adrenalite, is useful. So to me, that seems like a pretty solid warlord trait. And then lastly, we have precision blows. Each time an unmodified hit roll of 6 is made for a melee attack made by this warlord, the target unit suffers a number of mortal wounds equal to the damage characteristic of the weapon used for the attack, and the attack sequence ends. So you're just looking at that point, taking your many attacks, and obviously you have to roll 6s, so it's not, going to hit very frequently, but when it does, you're going to be doing some decent damage, with no wound rolls necessary, enemies aren't getting saves, etc. You're just, boom, here's a fucking mortal wound. End of story. When she's already attacking 6 times on top of, once again, anything else, that's useful. I would still think that the other two are more useful overall, just because the succubus, unless she's using a relic of some sort that might do some extra damage, her close combat weapons do 1 damage apiece. So, lastly, we have Homunculus Coven Warlord traits. Master Regenesist. Each time the warlord uses their fleshcraft ability, the target model regains up to 3 lost wounds instead of D3. So useful if you're trying to use him more as healing support. Master Nemesine. Each time this warlord makes an attack, add 1 to that attack's wound roll. Once again, if you're trying to get him stuck in, would not be a bad choice. Let's see here. But he's already got poisoned weapons 2+. It's only on his scissor hands, and the Ichor injector. Let's see here. Each time if a hit is scored. No. So it's only actually useful. Makes attack to that wound roll. Yeah, so it's really only useful on scissor hand, if he's using that weapon. So just keep that in mind, that it's kind of limited in its function. It's a nice feature. Modifying your wound roll is good, but when you're already wounding on 2s for most of your stuff, it doesn't make a damn difference. Then we have Master Artisan. Add 1 to the toughness and wound characteristics of this warlord. So you'd be looking at a toughness 5, 7-wound homunculus. If you want one that's got some staying power, and I just knocked some crap over that's under my desk. I think it's time to clean my desk if I'm knocking shit over with my feet. If you're looking for giving your warlord some staying power, that one would not be a bad choice. So, realistically, once again, Master Nemesine is very limited, in my opinion, in its function. The ability to just pass out 3 free wounds to be healed up on targets is nice, but that's only if you're close enough to make it useful. And making your warlord super survivable is always a good thing. So yeah, I would say Master Artisan is my favorite of the three, followed by Regenesis, and then Nemesine, once again, is a little too specific on his uses. Though Scissor Hands does give you extra attacks, so it's not useless to have that. Go ahead and move on ahead, though, now to the relics. There's, once again, not a whole lot to choose from here. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 relics in total. This book, because of the amount of the variety of choices you have as far as the way you build the force between the cabals, covens, and cults, it makes sense that they're not going to have full-fledged features for all of those. So there's going to be lesser to go around. Starting with Parasite's Kiss, it replaces a splinter pistol. So the splinter pistol, just for the point of reference, is 12-inch range, pistol 1, strength 2, no AP, 1 damage, poison weapon 4 up. This becomes a pistol 3 at 12-inch range, strength 2, AP neg 2, damage 2, and it's a poison weapon 2 plus. And each time an enemy model is destroyed by an attack made with this weapon, the bearer regains one last wound. So yeah, just going ahead and taking your splinter pistol and making it a fuck ton more dangerous. Tripling your damage, or tripling your output as far as attacks goes. Increasing the likelihood of your enemy failing their save roll, which is nice. Doubling the damage. So overall, you could be looking at putting out 6 times as much damage as you normally would. And your likelihood of doing that damage is much higher because of that 2 up. So, pretty nice if you're looking just to pack some, you know, bring a gun. Just gonna pack some heat. Yeah, inside joke. Anywho, the Helm of Spite. In your opponent's psychic phase, the bearer can attempt to deny 1 psychic power as if it were a psyker. If that psychic power is successfully denied, the psyker attempting to manifest that power suffers perils of the warp. Useless if you're playing against somebody who doesn't have any psykers. And if you're up against psykers, given the fact that I don't think there's much anti-psyker shit in this army otherwise, then it's not a bad choice to have that at that point. I'm trying to double check here. There's that thing, but that one doesn't have it. What about you? Do you have it? Yeah, so overall, it does appear that the army just is very, very, very limited in being able to defend itself from psykers. So, not bad to have. It's not going to protect your whole fucking army, though, from psychic attacks. So, keep that in mind, that there are the limitations there with it. You know, you may want at least to have somebody who can deal with psychers. And yeah, you're just not going to really find it otherwise. So, might not be a bad idea to have at least one. But I don't think you're going to find yourself using it very often at all. Namely, not because there's not enough psychers to defend against, but namely, it's just very limited to just the warlord, so, or whoever has the helm. The Nightmare Doll, homunculus model only, each time the bearer would lose a wound, roll a d6, on a 4 plus that wound is not lost. So imagine, if you will, having the extra wound, the extra toughness, and being able to ignore wounds on a 4 up. You're looking at a homunculus that will not fucking die. The Djinn Blade. It replaces a Husk Blade. So let's go ahead and look at the Husk Blade rules for reference as soon as I can actually flip a fucking page. Jesus Christ. Husk Blade. Melee strength user. Neg 2. 2 damage. The Djinn Blade becomes strength plus 1. AP neg 3. 3 damage. You get 2 additional attacks. But at the end of the fight phase, roll a d6. If you made any attacks on a 1, you suffer 1 mortal wound. So, you are looking at pumping out more attacks, which is always a plus. More dice to roll. You're going to be hitting most, for the most part, at strength plus 1, hitting at strength 4. So, not super useful against most opposing characters. But the AP neg 3 and 3 damage is very good. You're going to want to put this on somebody who's either just meant to assassinate the shit out of somebody and or to go blending through, you know, heavier infantry and shit. So the succubus does not have access to a husk blade. So it looks like it's just the Archon, I think, that has access to it. Yeah, that's what it looks like. So... very limited. Once again, it would be at strength 4. I was right about that. But Archons are pretty powerful at close combat now too. So if it was available to a succubus, holy fuck. But yeah, no, I would say that's a good choice if you are looking to, once again, just tear through the enemy's lines or throw your Archon at their warlord and just put him down in the ground. So, The Animus Vitae has the following profile. 6-inch range, grenade 1. That's it. But it's got abilities. The bear can only shoot this weapon once per battle. Which, as a note, I used to be totally against once per battle things. But once you realize how the battles aren't very long as far as the amount of turns anyways, the amount of opportunities you'll have to shoot stuff, etc., it doesn't bother me as much. So, anyway, if it hits, the target unit suffers D3 mortal wounds. If it has 11 or more models, it's D3 plus 3 mortal wounds until the end of the turn. Friendly units with a Power from Pain ability treat the current battle round as being one higher than it actually is when determining what effects they gain. I mean, yeah, mortal wounds, great. Once again, though, when are you going to use it? 6-inch range, you're going to have to be really fucking close to somebody. You know, it's you're probably going to want to use it to either, once again, put down a character or blend through stuff. And the bonus to the Power from Pain ability is nice, but very limited otherwise, in my opinion. Then we have the Triptych Whip. This is for a succubus model, and it replaces her Agonizer. So, as far as, let's go ahead and take a look at what does the Agonizer do. I thought I was on the right page, and I'm not on the right page. Where'd that page go? There it is. All right. Agonizer is strength user, neg 3 AP, 1 damage, poison weapon 4 up. This one is still strength user, but it's also still neg 3, but it does double damage. It's a poison weapon 2 up as opposed to 4 up, so highly increases the likelihood of doing damage. And you get 3 extra attacks. So if you're a succubus and you have this thing, you're looking at putting out 9 attacks, plus let's say you're the warlord and you have a Quicksilver fighter, you are now pumping out 11 fucking attacks. 11 attacks. That is a big, big fucking yikes, possible. So, you know, once again, this is only going to make your warlord better. And that's on the assumption that you, or I shouldn't keep saying your warlord, because you could buy this relic for a non-warlord succubus. That is fine. But stacking it with the warlord trait thing, it would be nice. But there's ways that you can do that if she's not your warlord. So, yeah, overall, I think this is a great choice for somebody who's really looking to get into combat. If you get a very strong witch build, or just a very strong melee build as a whole in your army, this would be a good choice to really make a succubus go from deadly to insane in a short period of time. So, and then there's a whole bunch of stuff about the Crusade stuff. Like I said, we're going to go ahead and skip that. Let's just quick run through the abilities of the army as a whole. I know we've gone over several of these before, but we're going to just, you know, go through them to for completion's sake. Power from Pain, it applies to every unit if your army's Drukhari or unaligned. And these are cumulative effects based on what battle round it is. So on a 1-up, they have a 6-plus invulnerable save. 2-up. They could charge in a turn in which they advanced. 3-up, each time a model in this unit makes a melee attack, add 1 to the hit roll. If this unit has the vehicle or monster keyword, it does not suffer the penalty incurred to its hit roll for firing heavy weapons at enemy units that are within engagement range of it. Then we have the Mantle of Agony at a 4-up. They have a 5-up invulnerable save. Then lastly, battle round 5 or higher. Each time a morale test is taken for this unit, it automatically passes. If this unit's characteristics could change as it suffers damage, this unit is considered to have double the wounds remaining for the purposes of determining what those characteristics are. So the further you get through the game, the more this shit stacks. It's cool shit. Poisoned weapons. Basically, whatever the value is, as long as you're not attacking vehicle or titanic units, that is the unmodified wound roll to make success. So even if you would normally need a 6 because you're strength 3 against a target, no big deal. If you're poison 4, it's a 4. Blade Artists. Each time a model in this unit makes an attack with a melee weapon on an unmodified wound roll of 6, improve the armor penetration characteristic of that attack by 1. I think this is primarily or only on witch cult units. But yeah, being able to punch through your enemy's armor better is good. Insensible to pain, I believe this is for all Covens related units. Each time a model of this unit would lose a wound, roll 1d6, and a 5 up, that wound is not lost. So, with that in mind, admittedly, I hadn't thought about this. Let me just double check here. Insensible to pain. Yeah. So, that nightmare doll that takes you to the 4 up. Not quite as useful then in turn, but it still has its purpose. You know, it's still making you more powerful, but you may or may not want to use up a relic to do so. And then we have the combat drugs ability. I think this is once again mostly, if not exclusively, to witch cults. Before the battle, determine what additional abilities are granted by the combat drugs. You can select one of the abilities from the table below for a unit. Alternatively, you can randomly determine two abilities from the table for units with the combat drugs ability by rolling 2d6 and looking up the result. If a double's rolled, roll both dice again until two different results are rolled. Combat drug effects must be noted on your army roster. If you wish to randomly determine a unit's combat drug ability, simply write random on your roster. So, we are looking at six abilities. We kind of just went over some of them, but once again, we'll reiterate here. Adrenalite, if it made a charge move or performed a heroic intervention, then until that fight is resolved, add one to the attack's characteristics of models in this unit. So even just like squads of witches are just pumping out stupid amounts of damage. Grave Lotus, add one to the strength characteristic of models in this unit. All right, strength 4, but you already have poison weapons anyways. It's not going to be super useful most of the time, I wouldn't think. Because I'm pretty sure that most of your weapons are still poisoned. I could be mistaken, though. Witches, Agonizers, poison, Hecatari Blade is not, Hydro Gauntlet's not, Okay, I take it back. The Hecatari Blade is the standard equipment for witches. That actually is pretty useful. I stand corrected, and I apologize for being a fucking liar. Quite useful then at that point, in comparison. Hypex, add 2 inches to the move characteristic of models in this unit. When you're trying to get into melee, moving fast is good. Painbringer, add 1 to the toughness characteristic of models in this unit. Since you're strength 3 or toughness 3, you're usually going to fold like a wet paper bag. This gives you a little bit more likelihood of surviving enemy weapons, given the fact that most average weapons of the game seem to typically be around the strength 4 mark. And then save and reverse, most models are toughness 4 in many cases. So I shouldn't say most models, it's most armies that's kind of like their average. So. Serpentine, 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 many differences. It's Serpentine minus an E. Improve the weapon skill characteristics of models in this unit by 1. I think witches are hitting on 3-ups, so they'd be looking at 2-ups instead. So pumping out that amount of attacks, considering they each do 3 apiece. Well, let's just say you've got 20 models. So you got your Hecatrix with 4 attacks. You've got 19 of them with 3 attacks apiece, so that is 61 if I'm doing my math right. 61 attacks that are hitting on 2-ups. So, yeah, definitely nothing to scoff at. Lastly, Splinter Mine. Improve the ballistic skill and leadership characteristics of models in this unit by 1. The ballistic skill bonus isn't super useful for most character or for most witch cult stuff. The leadership boost, considering most of them are leadership 7 or 8, it's not that important overall. Splinter Mind is one that I would say, if you get it, cool. If you don't, it's not going to, ruin your goddamn life or anything. So that right there is all of the remaining info I really wanted to go through, but let's quick run through the FAQ as well. We already went over the Raiding Forces FAQ piece. And then if you are following along with your book, turn to page 61 for the Agile Hunter's ability. This is one of the other cult's abilities. So if you have a witch cult detachment, then you're going for custom. Your Agile Hunter's is all-consuming. It adds one to the attack roll if you target a unit that flies. And, you know, and it says if the unit with a succession with the Combat Dregs ability has the Hypex ability, add 4 inches to that unit's move characteristic instead of 3. Well, that's weird because we just said 2. Guess what? Yeah, they realized they fucked up. So it's add 3 to that unit's move characteristic instead of 2. So not quite as impressive, but not that big of a loss either. Next up, page 62, Diabolical Soothsayer. Change the first sentence. Well, let's see what the first sentence is. Let's see here. When this model is set up on the battlefield, choose one of the below. They change it to after this model is set up on the battlefield for the first time, choose one of the below. I guess there were assholes who thought that every time, like if you pull him into reserve somehow and he pops back up or whatever else, that meant they could choose the other one if they felt like it, that they wouldn't have to always choose the same one. But I say you're clearly just milking the situation. It's clearly meant to say what it says. So, but that's just me. Page 65, Dark Technomancers. Let's see here. So it says change the first sentence. So let's find Dark Technomancers. Each time a unit with a succession is selected to shoot, you can choose to enhance any or all of the ranged weapons models in that unit are equipped with. If you do so until the end of the phase, each time an attack is made with an enhanced weapon, add 1 to the wound roll and 1 to the damage characteristic. But the attack roll cannot be rerolled. If any unmodified rolls of 1 are made for attacks, the bearer's unit suffers 1 mortal wound after shooting the weapon. If the bearer is a vehicle or monster model, it suffers D3 mortal wounds instead. We are changing the first sentence too. Each time a unit with this obsession is selected to shoot, you can choose to enhance any or all of the ranged weapons modifiers in that unit that are equipped with. Liquefier guns and twin liquefiers can never be enhanced. So I suspect that the point and purpose here is I'm pretty sure that both of those weapons... Here we go. Liquefier. So both of them are like flamethrowers is the problem. I think that's why you're seeing that, is because of the improved, likelihood to attack. It's already, or excuse me, it wasn't to attack. Okay. It was for the wound roll and damage characters. Basically, there's just too much, that's automatically hitting and then doing all that crap on top of it. So, next up. Page 71, Take Them Alive. So, it's a stratagem. It's an agenda. So, the progressive objective. If you select this objective, you score victory points at the end of the battle for each of the following that apply. Score 3 points if any character or monster units were destroyed by melee attack made by a Drakari unit from your army during that battle round. Score 1 if any unit, excluding character, monster, or vehicle units, were destroyed by a melee attack made by a Drakari unit from your army during that battle round. Ugh. Yawning. Once again, I'm on a lot of fucking drugs to deal with this allergy crap, so... unsurprising. Let's see here. It's changing the first sentence from if you select this objective, you score victory points at the end of the battle for each of the following that apply. And they've changed it to you score victory points at the end of the battle round, which makes a lot more sense. Next up, page 73, Master Nemesine. Okay, well, let's see here. Each time this warlord makes an attack, add 1 to that attack's wound roll. And they've changed it to reroll a wound roll of 1. Add 1 to that attack's wound roll. I'm torn now. I think the reroll is more useful. Once again, I think I mentioned earlier that, you know, the poisoned weapons aren't really going to benefit, to my understanding, versus the other weapons. So there's some limitations there. But yeah, being able to reroll the wound rolls is nice. And then they did make some changes to points values that are important to note. So we have page 114. Drazar, where are you? He's 135 points in the book, 145 in the FAQ. So, you know, 10 points can make a difference, though. So keep that in mind. And then the Raider on page 115. Damn. 85 points in the book, up to 95. So once again, 10 points. You're going to see more Raiders than you are Drazars, that's for sure. So, and then this was admittedly FAQ'd a while back. But Reavers, they changed the points costs on those things dramatically. So Reavers to start with are 10 points per model. And then they have the Agonizer at plus 5, Blaster at plus 15, Caltrops at plus 5, Grav Talon plus 5, Heat Lance plus 10, and Power Sword plus 5. They have now changed it so that the Blaster is only plus 10 points. The Caltrops are still 5 points, and the Grav Talon is also 5 points. Why the fuck did they have those listed on there then? That's weird. It seems like the FAQ might need an FAQ. But yeah, going from 10 points per model to 20, doubling the amount of points that each model takes up, definitely lowers the value of Reavers overall. I still think they're a good unit, even with the increase, so... and then lastly, it talks about the Animus Vitae. Does its ability only take effect if the attack made with this weapon hits? Okay, so that would be the whole end of the turn. Friendly units get power from pain that's higher. And it does say yes. So the attack has to at least hit. It doesn't have to... let's see here. Because it doesn't actually roll for regular wounds and stuff. It dishes up those mortal wounds. That makes sense overall. Because otherwise, you know, if you fail to use it properly, but then you still get a big bonus. That's a weird choice. The FAQ makes a lot of sense. I know a lot of the internet is bitching, moaning, and complaining that the FAQ has completely ruined Drukhari and they're not worth playing anymore. Say it is me. No, fuck you. Every faction's got its point and purpose. And just because the flavor of the month isn't quite as powerful as it was last month, it's not a big fucking deal. So, I think at this point we're going to wrap this up and call it a call. I am planning next week to try and start into the Adeptus Mechanicus review. Hopefully get through a lot more of it in one sitting, as opposed to many micro, episodes focused on it. But as always, you can, follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. You can follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. You can also check out the painting studio, Danger Close Painting Studios. That's also on Facebook. So, and it's on Instagram too. So just as an FYI, but I think we're going to call it a call. Thank you guys for listening. I will catch you all in the next episode. This is Caleb Myers signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.